We are back with another episode of Pound for Pound. I'm your host, Henry Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
The Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman.
And Kamaru, man, we had a crazy weekend of in combat sports. Obviously, UFC 299. But before we get to UFC 299, I want to talk about Francis Ngannou versus Anthony Joshua. Man, what are your first thoughts on this, Kamaru? Obviously, you know, we know your boys with him. The last time you were with him, you walked him out when he fought Tyson Fury. And for the whole world to know, it's out there. You let this dude 200K. So tell me what's good, brother. Tell me how is it that you saw the fight?
Well, it was a very, very tough one to watch. It's a tough one. I can't really put it into words, but I think... you can always point to different things that might have played a factor here and there, but the result is what it is. It was a hard one watching my brother go down like that. But hey, if you're in this combat sports world long enough, that's bound to happen at some point. And it happened. It was very difficult to see the progression of how things play themselves out in the fight, but it happened. We can't shy away from it. It's very, very tough to win. It's to enjoy winning if you don't know what losing feels like. And so it is what it is. It happened, but props to Anthony Joshua. You know, Anthony Joshua showed, I think, handled himself as a outstanding professional. He showed what it is to be a technical boxer, because I think to date, people can say whatever they want to say about him. They can say whatever they want to say about Francis, but I do honestly believe that is Anthony Joshua's best performance as a boxer yet. And the way he was able to stay composed, the way he was able to control his distance, control the pace, control the fight, set up his strikes. I mean, yeah, what an amazing performance by Anthony Joshua. And it was hard seeing my brother Francis like that.
Well, you know, to talk about that, Kamaru, obviously, you know, we've seen Kamaru, I mean, we've seen, you know, a guy like Alexander Volkanovski, who's the top of the world, and now is eventually getting knocked out a couple of times. Obviously, you know, I don't want to pin a, trying to put you on that spot, but obviously you've been knocked out. I mean, what would you recommend? Obviously, being on the other side of pretty much, because there's not too many people have really have been through the experiences like you guys have. What advice would you give to a guy like Francis Ngannou? Does he take a year off? Does he take 6 to 8, maybe 9 months off in order for him to actually come back again? Because you got to remember, he got dropped 2 times, and then the third time he pretty much got put out cold from, you can tell from the camera, his right arm was sticking up. I mean, if you were to give Francis some advice, what would it be?
Yes, I will. You know, when he feels up to it, me and my brother will have a conversation. We texted a little bit, but we'll have a conversation. And my advice would just be to take his time. Take your time. At the end of the day, no one can tell you when that time is, that appropriate time is, because he's a professional, you know, just like I am, just like you are. He's a professional. He knows his clock. He knows his time. He knows what he's capable of being able to handle. And so I would say just take your time. You don't need to rush back, because as competitors, as professionals, what we do is we want it back ASAP. We want to get that back in blood as soon as possible. We lose. We don't like to wallow in that feeling of a loss. You know, we don't like to be defeated. So we want to get it back right away and get back in the win column. And that's a mark of a champion. But I think in a situation like this, just take your time. When you're prepared and you feel up to it, then get back in there. But Francis Ngannou is put so many people to sleep for you know, us to... everyone's been asking me, "What? Oh man, how do you feel? How do you feel? Oh, that's crazy." Hey, it is what it is. But how many people has he killed? like that. Well, not kill literally, but how many people has he done that to?
Right, so, right.
You know, it is what it is. It's the nature of the beast. I think he takes his time and he comes back when he knows he's ready to come back.
Damn. No, well, there you have it. Wise words from the Nigerian Nightmare. Let's get over to UFC 299. Let's start the main card, man. Piotr Jan versus Song Yadong. I tell you what, Kamaru, this fight between these two guys, especially in that first round, it seemed like Song Yadong's youth, his recovery time, his power, him using his wrestling like I thought he would. But within the second and third round, Song Yadong just didn't click for him. It's almost like he just started kind of relying on that overhand right, just pretty much trying to counter him. It was pretty much the same combination. But guess what? You got to give credit where it's due. And I felt like Piotr Jan did a really good job of mixing his fighting. He was able to make that transition in the second and third round, you know, with those crazy uppercuts, you know, kicking to the legs, and then eventually surprising them with takedowns. I mean, you're talking about a guy like Piotr Jan taking people down, a guy with elite striking going in there and taking down a guy that has great grappling and a jiu-jitsu black belt, and obviously has great wrestling too, in a guy like Song Yadong. And I just feel like, man, it almost seems like Piotr Jan caught that second win and was easily and able to dominate and, you know, win the second to eventually dominate in the third.
I mean, I don't want to say he dominated the fight. I think it was a very, very close fight, especially the first two rounds. And in the third round, Piotr Jan got his way. In this fight, what you really saw, and I knew this was going to be a banger, you know, what you really saw was a jockeying for position. Both guys jockeying for position. Both guys really bringing on their wills and their game plans to the table, trying to see who would maximize it. And I thought Song Yadong did a great job of really pushing that in the first and second. Piotr Jan, his whole objective was to be able to keep Song Yadong upright and in a particular distance to where he can land strikes and use his boxing. Piotr Jan has some of the best boxing in that division. And Song Yadong, he's got very heavy hands. I think the boxing is not as clean as Piotr Jan, but he hits you, and if he hits you clean, you're going to feel it. And Piotr Jan definitely took a couple shots from him, but I think it was Piotr Jan just wanted to stay upright, be able to use his footwork, keep the fight away from the wrestling, the grappling aspect of it. Because once you saw that, he started to fade a little bit, but he did a great job of moving his feet and was able to keep Song Yadong standing up. And then he kept Song Yadong in a position of thinking, okay, we're just going to stand up and strike. And that's when he started mixing in his wrestling. I think it was an excellent game plan for Piotr Jan. I think he showed that he's still in the mix, you know, and he can still get it done. But I definitely think that this is a winnable fight for Song Yadong, for sure. And I think guys like, look, he implemented. There was a period, I think maybe the second or maybe the first, he implemented. He started fighting like Merab. He's pressuring him. He was just landing strike. And Piotr Jan looked a little flustered at times in that fight, early on in the fight.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think, you know, Piotr, in his position that he's in right now, I think, you know, you got to see if the Sanhagen fight again, or maybe he gets a guy like Umar Nurmagomedov, and I think he could be one fight away from fighting for the title again. Like the UFC, the rankings on how it works, I mean, there's a lot that could be done. You know, I guess whether they're gonna make that fight with Umar and Corey Sanhagen, or they give Umar Piotr Jan Russia versus Russia. But moving on, I think there's a lot at the bantamweight division. You know, they call it Murderer's Row. You know, let's talk about let's talk about
who calls it that.
Oh, you everybody! Call it that? Oh, Joe Rogan, dude, listen up, dude. 70 nor 55 has nothing on 35.
What?
35 is a stack,
Henry.
It's stacked. Come on,
it is stacked. It is stacked. But
so you're saying 70 is more stacked than 35? The amount of talent.
I mean, I didn't say all
pound
that,
for
but
pound,
hey,
pound for
there's
pound.
Murderer's Row there as well. So I didn't say all that, but 70's got some killers in there,
yeah,
as you know.
100%. But you know what? Talking about 170 pounds, Gilbert Burns versus Jack Della Magna. Delena. I tell you what, Kubaru.
Delena.
Yeah, Jack Della. You see how many times people at the broadcast were messing that name up?
Yeah, Jack Della Maddalena.
Yeah, Jack JDM. Della Maddalena. Yeah. Gilbert Burns. I feel like Gilbert Burns started off really well in the fight. You know, I was able to win that second round. And you almost figured if he was going to go back to that wrestling. You know, he was creating those fights with Jack to eventually look for those takedowns. But a lot of the grappling also got Gilbert Burns tired. You know, falling into that third round. You know, Jack was losing the fight. And his coach said, hey, we're going to need to punch his lights out. We're going to have to make, something's going to have to change Jack. And I just feel like Jack's youth, his experience of being in there with high caliber fighters, he was just able to kind of somewhat pull that trigger. But what I really like about Jack is the fact that, you know, he knows that he's not going to play the bottom game. Like, the best thing he could have done in that fight was get to his feet, look for something big, press him, threw that knee up the middle, and that's pretty much all she wrote. I mean, talk about a warrior in Gilbert Burns, but it's almost like, where does Gilbert Burns go from here? The number fourth ranked fighter at the welterweight division. Does Jack now step into his position at number four? Because I also feel like Jack could be a fight or two away from actually fighting for a title.
It was an amazing fight, but I think it still sheds light on the gap of kind of some of the guys. Because let's be honest, Gilbert Burns was winning the whole fight. I think just minor adjustments here and there. And, you know, Jack loses a 30-27 split, 30-27 unanimous decision. I think, but I said it before, there's something about Jack, his poise in the way that he fights, that just, you know, wears on guys. He doesn't get enough, I would say he doesn't get enough credit for his counter wrestling. When he's taken down, being able to scramble, get underneath, when he's in that you saw him when he's in that cradle position, being able to sit through and then go for his single leg. His counter wrestling is quite well. It's pretty good. And I think it's just his poise. He was able to kind of gas Gilbert a little bit because of his poise and his ability, like you mentioned, Henry, to stand up. I think just minor adjustment there, Gilbert understanding how to just control the position and hold him as opposed to, you know, getting into those scrambles. I think that fight's different. But, yeah, JDM is now has shown that, yeah, he's up there. You know, I don't know if you put him in the top four, but I definitely think he's up there. And he's, you know, a couple fights away for potential title shot.
Yeah, I mean, what's next for him? Like, well, what would be the matchup? We just saw a text from Shakhov Rakhmonov, you know, saying, hey, you're pretty much like somewhat my next victim. Like, you could run, but you can't hide. I mean, that fight's intriguing. But, yeah, but I will say this about Shakhov. I think if I'm the UFC, I would want to build both of these guys. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would want to build Jack a little bit more, give him another maybe tough fight, maybe give him Ian Garry. You know, maybe get those two new generational fighters to maybe fight, because when you go up against a guy like that's a veteran like Shakhov, who can submit, who's got brutal power too. I mean, you're probably a fight away from fighting a guy like that. As much as a fan that I am for JDM, I'm just not too sure what is it that the UFC wants to do. But I will say this: if he picks the right fights, Kamaru, this guy could be literally two fights away from fighting for the title. And no disrespect to you, Chad. No disrespect to you, my brother.
No. It's okay. I agree, but I disagree with you. I mean, they're not. Shafkat's not a veteran that's been in there for plenty of years. Won a title, he's not a veteran. I think Shafkat, Ian Garry, and Jack Della Maddalena are all in the same position. They're young, streaky guys. And I would even throw a guy like Sean Brady in there. Sean Brady's actually been in the UFC longer than these guys. You know, Sean Brady's just taking his time. I don't know what the holdup is. I think maybe he's injured quite a bit. But I think Ian Garry, Jack Della Maddalena, and Shafkat Rakhmonov are all in the same position. They're young, streaky guys. I believe they're maybe undefeated, or maybe not, but the young guys that are on their way up and trying to get there, I do agree, they do need to be built quite a bit. So it's basically, it's up to the UFC. What are you going to do? Who are you going to gamble on? You have JDM fight Ian Garry. That's a big fight. You could put on a co-main event somewhere or put on a big pay-per-view to potentially raise these guys' stock. Or do you go JDM versus Shafkat? Or do you go Shafkat versus Ian Garry? You know, these are intriguing matchups that you can do for these guys to potentially build their stock as one of the newer generational guys that could potentially, you know, carry that division in the future.
Yeah.
So that's what I think, those guys.
Yeah, 100%. Well, let's move on, Matt, to the co-main event. Michael Venom Page versus Kevin Holland. I tell you what, does this scare you a little bit, Kamaru? Does this scare you a little bit?
Scare me in what way? What do you mean?
I think it's so cool how Michael Venom Page does this. Like, he plays the alter ego really good. But speaking about Michael Venom Page, he could become a superstar here. Will become champion? I'm not too sure. I'm not too sold on that, because especially when you got guys like JDM, you got guys like Gilbert Burns that can take people down and things of that matter. But I tell you what, that's one of my favorite walkouts of all time, and I mean that. You know what I'm saying? The way that...
Of all time?
One of them. Yeah, dude, because it was different. You know what I'm saying, Kamaru? It was different, the way he was doing it. And he was, boom, okay, he was reacting to the music. And
okay, listen to
it. And
you never
I know
seen somebody dance before?
No, of course. No, of course, bro. You know how many people like Israel? Obviously, we just saw, Pereira? Is that who it is?
Oh, I didn't even... I thought... Didn't they have a full choreographed... Wow.
Yeah, him and his boy. But obviously, you know, Israel wins that one. I'll give Israel that crown. But that being said, this guy is an entertainer. And I said it before, he has the gift of anticipation. The gift of great distance recognition. As soon as you cross that line, he's able to use his ability and his length to really hurt somebody. I mean... I was shocked a little bit that Holland didn't kick his legs enough, or the fact that he didn't hit him as much as I thought he probably would. But I'm also at the same time, Kamaru, because a guy like Michael Venom Page understands his distance and he does very well against guys that tend to come in and actually brawl. I mean, this guy's a problem, dude. I would love to eventually see him. And a guy like Steven Wonderboy fight. Like, I think that fight would be cool because they both kind of come from similar styles, but different gifts. You know what I'm saying? Where Wonderboy could attack some of the wrestling. Or, you know what I'm saying? So I think that's one fight that's very similar, that's pretty intriguing to me. But kudos to Michael Venom Page. I mean, the way that he was able to really anticipate Kevin Holland with the right hands, and the way that he was able to level change and hit him with that John Jones elbow and catch him a few times. I mean, we have never seen, we have never seen a guy like Kevin Holland, or even Dana White quoted, I have never seen somebody be a lot cockier than Kevin Holland. First time, first is the first. But other than that, Michael Venom Page, he's a problem.
Yeah, it was a fantastic, I don't know if I want to use that word fantastic. I would say, It was a good showing. Let's just start with the entrance. Entrance was great. I like MVP. I like the fact that he had the confidence to come in and do that. Entrance was great. I like that from MVP. You continue to, you know, build yourself in the best way. Now, based on that entrance, I would have liked to see him fight a little bit more, because I think he's definitely capable of something greater than what he put out. Yeah, and okay, if we realize Israel Adesanya came out to the Undertaker music last year, this exact same event, it was the main event, came out to the Undertaker whole deal. He did the whole spiel all the way out. But this was a nice, interesting twist to it. You know, it was whoever remixed the song, whichever DJ, it was nice because it was the Undertaker theme at the beginning, and then it turned into I'm a Piano, and you could just tell MVP could dance. MVP could do his thing. And I know he could dance because we were, we danced together last year at this exact same event at the after party. So I'm glad he had a great time. But I think he's definitely capable of more, and I think he should have showed a little bit more in there, because I do think that he had Kevin Holland in some compromising positions to where he could have potentially capitalized and put that fight away. But he shows how dangerous he is, how hard he is to fight. And I said that before the fight. I said that Kevin Holland has had a hard time with guys like this, and he's going to have a hard time, and he definitely did. MVP, I think it was a great, good win for him. You know, you got your feet wet now. Now I think he can actually open up a lot more and display all his skills that have made him, you know, known worldwide.
Okay, so you're...
I like it.
Okay, so you're in his position. We're the UFC. You know, obviously this is your weight division, Kamaru.
Yes.
Who would you like to see? Do you build a guy like Michael Venom Page, you know, to kind of entertain, like, because he's got the entertainment factor, or do you start giving them those top 10 guys? Maybe do you give them a guy like Ian Gary? Do you give them a JDM? Do you give them guys that are up and coming? You know, obviously, Michael Venom Page has been around for a minute, and, you know, he might be an old king like us, Kamaru. Where do you see his career flourishing?
What do I see? I see him. I think he's. I want to say I disagree with you. I disagree with you with a Wonder Boy fight. I do think, yeah, it's intriguing. Everyone goes, oh, it's intriguing. But when you have two guys that kind of, it's that only works with, I'm not going to say only works, but most of the time, especially in the MMA, it works when you have two guys of the similar style. You know, it mainly works when it's guys coming from grappling or wrestling. When those guys neutralize each other, that's when that works. I don't know, by having a point karate, two karate guys in there. Of course, MVP can dart in and hit you with some good shots, good elbows, and definitely put your lights out. But I think they're both going to play karate the whole time, and it might not be as exciting as everyone thinks it's going to be. So I disagree there in thinking that's the next guy. But I think give him kind of a guy that's going to try to mix in the grappling, because that's when I think you see the best of MVP, when he's able to defend those takedowns and then find his strikes with a guy that's going to be trying to grapple or wrestle him.
Yeah.
And if you give him two strikers, they're just going to both sit there and try to strike.
Right. It might just turn into a point fighting. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, exactly. You're right in that position. But, you know, I look at a guy like Michael Venom Page, and I look at the theatrics from him walking into the octagon, but also even the times that he did hurt, Kevin Holland. You know, he would do the whole thing, kind of like mocking him a little bit. I mean, is that a good thing, bro? Like, do you think a guy like Michael Venom Page, that person feel like there's fighters that need to have fun while doing that, and then there's other fighters who can't force it. It always seems like Michael Venom Page is that type of guy. Could dancing around against the highest level, because let's be honest, Kevin Holland is, you know, he's good, but he ain't that top five. He ain't necessarily that top 10. I mean, what two cents would you give on that, Kamaru?
Yeah, I think it's great for him as long as he's able to do it and not get put to sleep. You know, he's doing a great job with it, and as long as he can do it safely, then do it. There was a couple times where it was just bad. Like he would sweep him. I think it may be like the third round, end of the second or third round. It got to the point where Kevin Holland was just, I don't know what to do. And MVP, they would clinch up. MVP would sweep him, throw him on the ground kind of, and then just kind of mock him. And that, to where I was just like, wow, you know, you can't be letting that happen to you like that as a professional. But as long as he can do it safely, continue to do it. But, you know, it's okay to do until that one guy hits you, gets you caught, and it's game over. And we saw that it's big risk with clowning the guy and big reward. Now, on the risk part, we saw it when he fought Douglas Lima the first time. And then on the reward part, you see it when he clowns guys and he does the 360 spin and kicks you in the face and you're out and he's still standing there.
Yeah, but he'll do
it's
the
amazing.
He'll do the 2-2 row too if he's got you hurt. So but I get you, Kamaru, because he could also play that psychology, and that just says, man, that he you know, he understands the game. But moving on, man, to the co-main event. Godly, you know,
yeah,
Dustin
what?
Poirier and Benoit Saint Denis, like bend the knee. I tell you what, Kamaru, you hit the nail on the head on this one.
I told you. It's just something about a guy like Dustin, and it's something that's intriguing that I'm intrigued by with him is every time I've been around him, I kind of actually want to get to know him more. And we hopefully we will eventually and break bread together and chat. I'm fascinated by the chip that he carries throughout his whole career. It's like a chip on his shoulder. You're never, like I mentioned, you're never at ease with some guys. And Dustin is one of those guys. And when these young guys pick on him, on guys like Dustin, hey, at some point, I'm going to get in there and I'm going to show you that I definitely still got a lot of fight in me. And Dustin, once again, went in there and he proved it.
Yeah, and I think, so moving forward for a guy like, you know, obviously I think for Benoit Saint Denis, it's like, because it was a 5-round fight, like he did in that fight, like it's almost like he didn't know how to pace himself.
100%.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I saw that. Like he was in a lot of grappling, a lot of squeeze, a lot of tightness. Like what really knocked him out is his inability to have to fight Dustin a certain way. Dude, your striking's good, but it's nowhere near Dustin Poirier's. Poirier could counter very, very well. But I also
You singing a whole new tune right now, Henry. But you singing a whole new tune.
No. I've always said this, Kamaru. Poirier, when it comes to strictly boxing at 155 pounds, I don't know who is it that could really stand with him. I was thinking this dude was going to do exactly what he was doing, but he just didn't have that threshold. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was a bit sloppy on his feet, and he was going for crazy takedowns. We decided to brawl with a guy who likes to not just throw or brawl, but, dude, he's a technical savage. Like, yeah, he'll fight you, but he brings his head offline eventually when he goes. But obviously, we all saw that Ali Abdelaziz put out a tweet, man, about Islam Makhachev. Even Islam Makhachev tweeted, "Very impressive, Dustin." You know, can I read that quote to you from Ali Abdelaziz, the greatest manager of all time? "Dustin Poirier took a huge risk tonight and came out on top. Looked amazing. Dustin versus Makhachev in June, especially since everyone else has fights. If the UFC is good with this, Islam is game."
Woo! I like it.
Tell me on this, Kumar. Hold on, Kumar. You said you never bet against Dustin Poirier against Justin Gaethje, against a lot of these guys. Now he's going up against your other boy, your other brother.
I never said I would never. I said the only times that I picked against him was those, and I'm not doing it for this last fight. I'm not doing it. This fight, I would just have to stay out of. It's like watching two of my friends fight, especially when Khabib fought Justin Gaethje. It's a very, very tough position. But I like both guys. First and foremost, I would definitely love to see this, because Dustin Poirier is kind of at the tail end. And that doesn't mean he's not still, he can't still go. He could definitely still go. But he's at the tail end. He's been in so many different fights. He's made some money. His family's well. He's doing great. And why not? Why not? I would love to see him get another title shot.
Yeah, March, of course, April, it's going to be tough.
Of course, it's going to be tough with when you've got guys like Justin Gaethje, who definitely deserves that shot. But those guys have fights in April. And if Islam can't wait for the winner of that Gaethje or the Sarukian fight, then I think why not? Why not give Dustin Poirier a shot to see if he can ultimately become the undisputed champion? Dustin is definitely a very dangerous guy, and I like him. I think that's very intriguing. And I think Ali Abdelaziz, you're right, the greatest manager of all time, because putting out a post like that makes everyone goes,
Yeah, well, not just that, but also even Islam. I guarantee you, we all know, man. We're all close to Ali. Talk to Islam, or maybe Islam send him a message. They're like, you know what? June looks good. You want to fight in June? Yeah, I want to fight in June. All right, I'm gonna tweet this, you tweet that. Let's get the fans involved. And I could see this fight, maybe. I could see this fight possibly. Wait, that's what headlining.
You do? Is that what you do?
I could see this fight. I could see this fight headlining. You know, UFC. You know, UFC 303. Call me crazy, Kamaru, but I think this is the fight to make for UFC 303 at the T-Mobile Arena. Call me crazy, Kamaru Usman.
Well, I like it, but you have to understand as well that Islam is a guy that is positioned to really, really do well in a couple of other markets. And so when you have a market like UAE, Abu Dhabi, and now another market like Saudi Arabia, I do believe Islam does well in those markets. I do believe I do well in some of those markets. And so I think you have to play, those play a part in where you could potentially put Islam. But great fight. I wouldn't mind seeing it.
Yeah, 100%. And you know what? You're absolutely right. Saudi Arabia canceled their event because they didn't have enough superstars. They love Islam. They're going to treat him like a king. So I could also see that fight happening sometime in June in Saudi Arabia. But moving on to the main event, Sean O'Malley versus Chito Vera. I tell you what, man, Sean's fucking good, man. Sean, when it comes to striking, he's got good fakes. Everything that he was doing before, now he's a lot tighter. His distance was better. I mean, he was able to really pick Chito apart like you wouldn't believe, man. I'm a bit disappointed with Chito. I'm thinking Chito's going to at least fight him, at least attempt a takedown. But Chito never attempted anything. Flat-footed, never faked, never used all that. Like, he was pretty much just missing. He kind of pulled the same card when he fought Corey Sandhagen. Just fought in the last 10 seconds of the fifth round. Like, I don't know where this dude's head is. But the only thing that I could say, Kamaru, that, you know, there could be a potential fight with me and Chito. You know what I mean? Like, because of the ranking. And I don't mind it. I'm still trying to get that Brandon Moreno fight. But, you know, Chito, especially the way he's performing, he just decides to fight in the last minute of every fifth round fight. I mean, I just don't know where his head's at. I don't know if it's that pressure that gets to him. But either way, man, the dude had no tactical fighting, never attempted a takedown, never attempted to really cover the distance and just bring the fight, was reacting to Sean O'Malley's, to all his fakes. And I've never seen somebody twitch so damn much. And that was like the biggest thing. I thought, and I won't give credit where it's due, because Sean does a really good job of moving the hip, faking here and there. But man, like you should know, it's like if the punch comes and hits you, it hits you. But Chito necessarily didn't do, like, yeah, Sean, it was a striking war. Chito never brought, and this is the same reason why he'll probably never touch a UFC title, because they just focus in on striking. I'm thinking, hey, if you're getting outstruck, pull some of the wrestling, attempt a takedown. Dude, you're a big dude. I mean, get to his legs, put him against the cage, clinch him, do something. But unfortunately, Kamaru Usman, Chito didn't do any of it.
Well, I wish we could just pull up the predictions and what I told you exactly what was going to happen. I wish we could do that, because everything that you just said didn't happen on Chito is exactly what I said was going to happen for Sean O'Malley. Sean O'Malley, I told you he was going to be cleaner. He's sharper. He's faster. He controls the distance very, very well. And his footwork was incredible. It was picture perfect, the exact fight that I thought was going to happen, except for one thing. You are right, Henry. Chito, his tactical awareness wasn't there. I mean, you beat the guy last time by being on top in his guard and just slicing him up with elbows, and you didn't even attempt a takedown. I do think. I wouldn't say where you don't know where his head was at. I definitely think that he got into the fight, and once Sean started putting together his arsenal, like I said, that kid's good. It was different. It was hard for him to be able to deal with, but he tried. There were a couple rounds where he would press forward, and he would have Sean backing up, And I think those are moments to where he should realize, I need to change levels, get this guy down, and potentially try to get him out of here. But you can't just walk forward with a guy like Sean. And this kid's good. This kid's good. All the hate and everything that people say, whatever, with him, I think they need to realize that this kid's good. He's just an evolution to the game. But there was times where he showed that fighting a guy like Merab or a guy like Umar Nurmagomedov, or maybe a guy even like Corey Sandhagen, that he could potentially have an issue, because Sean has done very well because he hasn't fought anyone that could strike like him, that who has the speed and pace and angles like he does. I think Corey Sandhagen is that guy, but also Merab and Umar and their pace and their relentless grappling, I think he could have a problem with. But, you know, he did a great job. Sean O'Malley, exactly what I said he was going to do. He did it. And I saw him at the after party last night. And I told him, hey, great job. You've defended that belt. So you were champ. So,
yeah, well,
great performance.
Yeah, well, what's really next for a guy like Sean, obviously he went out there. He picked the perfect matchup to defend his belt. I mean, he's calling out Ilia Topuria. I'm like, dude, Ilia Topuria, man. Like this dude's a bigger guy. Like, he is going to go in there and stalk you. But I think before then, obviously, he's like, Dana, give me a J. We're going to Spain, baby. I'm coming for Ilia Topuria. And then you saw what Ilya said. He says, Sugar, congrats. Was a beautiful performance. There is a fight chasing you with Merab. Get that done first. That's perfect. Ilya's a businessman. He's understanding this game. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's understanding the game. And obviously, Merab, it's his boy. It's like the three wise men. Israel Adesanya, Kamaru Usman, and Francis Ngannou. I mean, these guys are, I mean, this dude's throwing a bone. But the way that you'll really know if a guy like Sean O'Malley, yeah, does he have great striking? Kamaru, yeah, 100%. 135 pounds. If you want to strike with a dude like that, that understands fakes, distance, and now that he's throwing knees up the middle, I mean, with anybody in that division, if they decide to strike with Sean, his speed's crazy, dude. But how is it that he will adjust against a guy like Merab, a guy that's unorthodox, a guy that has a gas tank, a guy that's just going to be on you like a rat on a Cheeto? I mean, that dude's going to go in for takedowns. So am I surprised that Sean did that? No, I'm more surprised that Cheeto didn't make those adjustments. I think that's more of where I'm actually pissed. You know what I'm saying? I'm thinking he would maybe pick it up in the third, fourth, fifth. Like I said before, hey, let him punch you to death. And you saw in that fifth how tired Sean was getting. Now you add a little bit of that wrestling. You add a little bit of that clinch. You put him against the cage. Unfortunately, he never did that. But that being said,
yeah,
his next fight, Kamaru Usman, is against a guy like Merab Dvalishvili. How do you see this fight unfolding when they fight?
I think it's you're right. It's just a missed opportunity for Cheeto to really capitalize on some of the things that could have got him that victory. But with a guy like Merab is very, very relentless. And I think he could potentially give Sugar Sean O'Malley a very, very difficult time. But he has to be tactical and he has to be smart with how he approaches the fight. Because just because you got your wrestling and you got your pace and your relentlessness, but that definitely doesn't mean that you are going to be able to beat a guy like Sean O'Malley. Because, yeah, Sean O'Malley might, the path to winning might be to grapple with him, but no, he's still smart enough to be able to create that space, land a shot, and get him out of there. You saw it with a guy like Aljo. When Aljo takes you down, it's very, very difficult to get up. You fought the guy. It's very difficult to get away. And we thought that for sure he's going to be able to get Sean O'Malley down and definitely get that finish. Just like everyone's thinking now with Merab. But Merab, I think, has to be tactical in how he goes about this, because, you know, this kid is definitely the real deal. He could time you and he can get you out of there. But as far as the call out, I like it for Sean, because Sean, on behalf of Sean, because that's, of course, you want to do that. That's giving yourself an opportunity to be a humongous star, to winning two belts. And you know, God forbid you go up there and you don't get it done, you can come back down and still defend your belt. Great for him. But that's, Ilia Topuria is not that guy that you think you're just going to go up there and take out. He's a real killer. real killer. And I think that's a tough order of business for Sean O'Malley. But stay in your division and defend your belt a couple times. And yeah, and great. Like you mentioned, Henry, he's throwing his guy a bone. Take care of the other Georgian first. But yo, did you see the end? And Merab went up to him. And, oh my God. See, that's what I'm saying. That's the one thing about Sean that people hate, but I love. He's Merab goes, hey, congratulations, bro, why did you not mention my name? Because Merab is genuine about this. He's genuinely like, bro, give me my shot, bro. Like, bro, mention my name because then that builds our fight and give me my shot.
But he doesn't
and
watch
Sean's
it.
Like, oh, I didn't even see you there. Yeah, I didn't even know who that was. Oh, my God. I was like, God damn it, Sean. Hey, and you know what? The star power of Sean. And people might hate on it or people might not see it. And it's me, myself too, I don't necessarily understand it because all these fucking, you got streamers now that are fucking making more money than we ever would dream of. And I'm at the after party yesterday and I see these fucking guys next to this kid. And I'm like, yo, this kid could be a fucking star. He's a star. We can't deny that. He brought some fucking people out. Yeah, I was at the after party with Michael Irvin, right? Yeah.
Oh, Michael Irvin was there?
My man Mike. Yeah, Michael Irvin was out there lit. Did you see how good I was looking, bro?
Damn.
Did you see?
Watch out.
Did you see how I was shining, bro? Hey.
Hey, sponsor me, Kamara. I want to look like that too, my brother. What's up?
I got it. Okay, I got it. You know, get you right because sometimes Henry, you've been showing up a couple times. You know, looking, you know, and I'm like, yo, my bro,
looking
you know,
like a disco bomb.
You said it, not me. But woo, look at the way I was looking, bro. Chest out. You know, I haven't really been hitting the bench press a lot. You know, been punching, so you lose a little bit of that. But I had severe cleavage coming out of college when I had my thick on. Bro, that cleavage was deep in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you see that chest out glistening. You know, you got the two, you know, layered chains on, blinging on them. Ooh, throwing up the peace sign, letting them know, hey, everything is well. It's all good in that custom Dolce. But anyways, like you mentioned, Henry, you're right. UFC 299, the event was fantastic. What a great weekend of fights. You know, not just in MMA, but also in boxing. And unfortunately, you know, my brother Francis Ngannou was on the wrong end of that. But this is what it is to be a champion. Sometimes you gotta be down to come up. And this is just an opportunity for Francis Ngannou to get back up and show the world what a true champion he truly is. He's an inspiration for a guy that has gone through what he's gone through to be in the position that he's in. My hat's off to him. I love that man. And man, this was another great one.
So Kamaru, like always, my brother, always a great time actually chopping it up with you. And to all you fans, thank you guys for watching this great episode of Pound for Pound, a Shadow Lion production. I'm your host, Henry Cejudo, a.k.a. Triple C.
And I'm the Nigerian Nightmare, Kamaru Usman. Guys, make sure you like and subscribe. And new episode coming up Thursday with Uncle Chael. It's going to be a fantastic talk. So make sure you tune in, like, subscribe, and make sure you listen.
We out.